What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Deal Maven podcast. It's your boy, Raleigh Williams, the Pharaoh of Partial Acquisitions, and I'm here with Robert Bourne, the Jason Bourne of business, and Chandler Woodward, the Maven of marketing. So we have a good one today. We are going to talk about a business that was one of the first businesses that went from a personal brand to something with enduring value that sold for $400 million on a 8 or 9 year journey. But before we get into it, Chandler, what was the most interesting thing as we were jumping into this for you?
I think one of the biggest things I saw, or like just kind of diving into it, was seeing just some of the different parts that Toby and Caleb both would take into like taking it from that personal brand and positioning it different and like bringing in other characters to take it from just mainly Caleb to just being able to sell and exit. Like with other businesses not able to do that.
Yeah. Roberto?
Mark Andreessen famously said that software is eating the world. Both of the companies we're going to talk about went from fitness and non-software to decidedly software companies.
Yeah. I didn't know that the second one started in like fitness.
Hardcore fitness.
Fitness, equipment. Fitness. Oh, yeah. Equipment. Sure. Okay. So the background and the story that we're going to talk about today is the story of Kayla Itzinez and Toby Pierce as they were building a business called Bikini Body Guide that ultimately turned into a business called Sweat that they sold for $400 million to iFit, as a hardware and software conglomerate out of Utah, of all places, that they sold last year for. So I'm going to do a bit of kind of the background of how it all got started. And it's interesting for me because when I was in my summer internship in New York, we were living in this extended stay hotel. It was the first job that I ever had. It was the first time we were making money. I guess my daughter was one at the time, living in an extended stay hotel. Did you ever see our extended stay? Did you ever come?
I did, yeah. Like, we were living just down the road. I remember.
It's like a six floor walk up. There's no elevator. And so you have to go up six flights of stairs every single day. This is like the best job that you can get out of law school. And it's a like 400 square foot. It's a queen bed and a microwave and a built-in closet. And then the bathroom, when you open the door, there's a toilet right in front of you and then like a curtain for a stand-up shower. Like it's too small to fit a bathtub. And there's no bathtub. It's just like a little shower. And that is how my legal career started. And so one day I came home from work and Carly had, you know, she had been postpartum for almost a year. And she saw this thing on Instagram and it was called the Bikini Body Guide. It was like $120 for these two ebooks. One was a fitness, like what you could make your food with and what you could do to eat healthier. And then the other one was like this workout guide. And it was $120. And so she asked me for permission if she could buy it. She was like stressed about it. She's like, I don't know. Rob is married to my wife's sister. So he knows the gramp background of spending. Does that pass through? Is there a thriftiness that pervades?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's fair.
So anyway, my wife bought the Bikini Body Guide and she loved it. It totally changed her life. So I've kind of been involved in this in some way, shape, or form. I've known about it for a long time. So Kayla, in 2008, she is an Aussie. She's from Australia and she takes a course and she starts doing personal training and she really focuses on the women's only personal training center in Adelaide. And as she's doing this, she found that the kind of the typical training stuff that you do like NASM or the CPT certified personal trainer stuff that it didn't really cater to her clients the way that she wanted it to. So she started developing her own training programs just to kind of scratch the own itch that she needed as she was trying to train these women. And simultaneous to that, Toby Pierce, who became her co-founder and then her boyfriend, and they share a child together, he also was a personal trainer to get himself through college. And they met at a gym And there are a couple of podcasts where Toby kind of talks about him as a personal trainer that, you know, he went from being a personal trainer to then doing group training, and he kind of got flowed into the corporate training side of things, that there are these corporations that would pay him to come and do these group training situations. And it seemed like Toby from the beginning was always very business minded, that he wanted to figure out the best way to get leverage on his time in training. And so Kayla had also started posting on Instagram. This is again, 2011, 2012. And I think that she starts growing a fairly big following. And by 2013, 2014, they kind of decide, let's see if we can build some ebooks, some PDFs, and start publishing these PDFs and charging for it. And so kind of the way that they got started is basically for $50, you could get the fitness one. And then for another $50, you could get the nutritional one. And for $100 total, you could buy both of these ebooks. And that's kind of how it got started originally. And within a year of them doing it, they had over 1 million guides downloaded. So within a year, they had done like, you know, $30 to $50 million in revenue at like an insane gross margin. And the other interesting thing, one of the things that made it really appealing, like for when Carly was doing these programs, is Kayla, I think that she was really smart, because on her Instagram, it wasn't like, she would never post pictures of her face. You never knew what she really looked like for a really, really long time. And she would also always be posting other women that had success in the program. Like, she was always posting before and after pictures. And like, now, like, you can't run a Facebook ad with before and after pictures, because what's the rule on that, Chandler?
Just like, yeah, compliance. Like, you can't like promise any, it's just like basically ad compliance. Like, they'll just shut down your ad completely.
Cause it's like too persuasive, right? It's like too.
So you're promising the result. You're promising them. It's like, hey, you can do this too.
You can always do it on your own channel, which is what Kayla did. But like, Carly was massively loyal to Kayla because she really wanted to get posted on Kayla's Instagram page, so that way she could get followers. And so the first big change that they did is they went from these ebooks that were just kind of like ebooks to changing it to the Bikini Body Guides. And so Bikini Body Guide, this whole BBG, like, started to grow this cult following amongst the like the BBG community. So in 2015, they start doing this tour called the Kayla Edsina's Bootcamp World Tour. And they gave free group fitness classes. So Carly actually got invited to go to one of these in New York. And Kayla and Toby, a smart thing that they did was that I think that very early on, they intuitively sensed the importance of community and like being out amongst the people. I think you can get a lot of people that build an influencer brand and they want as much distance from the audience as possible. They want to be like publishing on social media, and like, it's like, oh, these are my followers and they exist for me to extort them to the extent possible. And and they were very savvy to not just keep it in like the digital only format, and to build, they had these women that would be like trainers. And so similar to like in Utah, you have like a high fitness thing where you have these coaches that do this all, and like those trainers kind of maintain brand integrity. BBG did this very early on, where in the US they would have these BBG meetups where women would all get together and they wouldn't pay any of these people. But like, Carly was like upset. Like, she was like dying to be able to be one of these free trainers in order to start building the community. And we'll see that that ends up being an important thing that they continue to do as they transition it to what ultimately becomes the Sweat app. By 2015, as they're doing this world tour, there are a couple podcasts where Toby starts talking about, they start getting a sense, right? I mean, it's very easy to feel like you're on top of the world. You're in your early 20s. You have a business that's doing 30 million top line and at 50% margins, right? You're making 15 million bucks a year.
It's crazy.
And for whatever reason, Toby and Kayla together, they decide that they have to do something. They basically have to undo everything that they did in order to build something to start extricating themselves from the business.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because when he said that, I heard like some similar things on different podcasts. I was like, oh, like how much of that is true and how much of it he's like trying to like put himself up like, oh yeah, I knew exactly what I was doing. But looking at it, like looking at their day one pages was like heavy, heavy, like Kayla, Kayla, Kayla. And then in the end of 2015, they start going, moving towards like Sweat with Kayla. And it's like, they start getting that Sweat brand early on. And then, like you said, like the movement and stuff, they start getting like, says like, this was in 2016, says get bikini body confident, join over 10 million women and get healthier, fitter. And so she takes herself out of it. And this is on Kayla's website and there's nothing about her. It's all people. It's like, join my fitness community. Cause like heavy, heavy.
I'm trying to think back to like, I wonder if that's one of the first, I think that there are a couple firsts. You have the rise of social media that Kayla rides that wave. And I don't know that you have very many other examples that this early on, they build their brand off of the product that they themselves sell versus, you know, if you're Paris Hilton, kind of OG influencer, Kim Kardashian, right? Like all of those people up until late, like Kylie and all those people, they kind of learn later on to start selling your own products. But I think Kayla is one of the first that starts monetizing her influence with a product that she herself controls and doesn't do much like brand collaborations outside of that. I'm trying to think of other kind of fitness things that existed around the time that like were so women dialed, right? That like P90X or like,
P90X,
can you think
like
of anything that was like, that picked one very specific segment and just like went for it maniacally?
You know, you can probably look back and find videos of old DVD, right? Like, I mean, P90X is a good example, right? Like, Kim in the Box, and that was probably pushed a little more towards males.
Yeah.
Just given the founder and his history, but...
What's Jazzercise? That's probably women-focused Jazzercise.
Yeah, but that started as a, you know, a class in a studio.
Yeah, totally.
Right? And I think it does correlate pretty well with Instagram, the rise of Instagram specifically, which, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the early user growth was based on women and it was very image focused, right? Mm-hmm. And so Kayla taking her own image, except for her face, and using that to sell a product brought in a huge community and a massive following.
So if you were the consultant to Toby and Kayla in 2015, and they say, we have a $30 million a year business that we ultimately want to sell for a bill, what were some alternate paths that they could have gone down that could have been feasible, right? So maybe go into like, what were the obvious issues that existed with their brand despite being hugely profitable for a 24-year-old? But if they wanted to get to a $500 million business, what would you say they needed to solve and some alternate paths that they could have taken outside of the path that they did take?
Well, if you assume that a lot of the growth came from ultimately her image, her Instagram following, you think about that acquisition platform, right? It was Instagram. It was Instagram for a long time. You drive people through that channel, pull onto the website, and then sell them a PDF. And so you start to say, what are the different channels that you could capture new customers from? Certainly the app store and a product with a much broader and more inclusive name might be one of them, which is the direction they went. I think, you know, in hindsight, it is 2020 and it looks like a masterstroke.
But that was the right bank.
But I mean, outside of that, right? Like, what are the other options? Do you try to attach yourself in some sort of partnership to a bigger brand? Potentially. That's an option.
Supplement. You could go a different product outside of software or an app, right?
Yeah. And what was her product? Her product was, I have a regime for women to get their desired body.
Yeah.
So you could step into adjacent products. You could step into supplements. You could step into workout equipment, all sorts of stuff.
Hardware.
Right? Yeah. So I think there are a few options, but they kind of took the path of maybe not least resistance, but it's a tough one. You maybe have one or two good pivots in terms of branding.
Yeah. I mean, like one or two shots on goal in terms of getting it right.
Yeah. And and if you miss, you miss hard, right? Because you take the effort to rebrand your entire business.
Yeah.
And if that brand doesn't land, you try to fall back. But
yeah,
I think it's tough.
I think it was interesting that they didn't bring on a CTO, right? Like to go from an ebook sold through Instagram to going through the App Store and like all of the technological issues that still, it's still hard to get onto the App Store and be compliant and all that stuff and push updates and all that stuff. And I mean, it seemed like they spent millions of dollars in the development of the Sweat app and didn't have anyone in house that like really managed that for them.
Yeah. And I think the other piece of that though, is it's a content engine more than anything else.
Yeah.
And so they can deliver the content
through technologically.
Yeah. The app itself is nothing special. There are a million apps that are packaged like it.
Yeah.
But if people believe the content and the output they're going to get from the content, that's why they keep coming back. That's why they pay the subscription.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way that it worked is in November of 2015, Kalen Pierce, they move Bikini Body Guide. What do you think that does from a branding perspective, from Bikini Body Guide to Sweat?
I mean, in my humble perspective, look, it's a generic name. It's inclusive. It's far more inclusive.
Yeah, if you imagine Bikini Body Guide and today, that would be worth $0.
Well, get a masterstroke, right? Kind of seeing which way the puck is going. But it's an inclusive name. That said, the name still indicates roughly what it is. Sweat, synonymous with fitness. So you know you're in the ballpark of fitness. It's kind of the classic one-word brand, which I always think is cleaner if you're a true brand aficionado.
Yeah.
It was a clear departure, too, from BBG. And so I think it hit a lot of the right notes. And if she still has a massive following and a lot of that customer acquisition methodology was based on people listening to her on Instagram, she can push the new brand. So she pivots the brand. The brand name is immediately more open-ended for folks wanting to get into fitness for the first time, wanting to get on an app, do it at home. But she still had her own acquisition channel, which was Instagram. And hopefully through word of mouth, the magic of the App Store and the algorithms, she could take advantage. And that's exactly what happened.
Because it's not always, I mean, obviously hindsight, but it's not always 100% obvious that inclusivity is the way that you should go with your brand, right? There's like benefits to being exclusive. And, you know, you have Tone It Up now, which is a New York outfit of two influencers that they've kind of gone on a bunch of distribution channels with supplements. And, you know, you could have said, we should promote one body style and exclude anyone who's not interested in that body style. How would you think about solving that? Should we go exclusive and say we're the cool girls from high school and everybody else who's not a part of us is, and be aspirational in the brand, or inclusive and kind of grab all potential body styles moving towards something?
It's a good question. I do think she had one advantage, right? She had hit the critical mass already in terms of followers.
Yeah.
So she had a sufficient base to build on, I think, either way for her.
You think she would have been right either way?
I think she would have been right either way. But I do think that by making it more inclusive, she'd already won her loyal followers. And you just shared the reference point, which is Carly's experience. And I think Allie had a very similar experience. People who had gone through the program saw the results and really respected what she had built as a demonstrable way to change your body and your self-esteem. So she had a loyal group of followers. That group wasn't going anywhere. So I think by making it inclusive, but still pay-gated, right, through an app, you get the best of both worlds. Had she only had a few hundred subscribers, I don't think that works.
I guess Lady Boss went the opposite path.
Yeah, I think, well, even like starting off, like she went completely.
So what's Lady Boss? Explain Lady Boss to
Lady Boss was like
to
a very,
the uninitiated. which is hopefully most of you.
So Lady Boss was, how it started was, what's her name? Kaylin.
Kaylin Poulin. Yeah.
Started Lady Boss in around the same time as
2016.
I think 2016. Yeah, it was 2016 is when they're really starting to like start to take off. And it was very, I think it was very Christian focused. Like,
it was an info product.
Complete info product.
I don't know that there's any other info product, I guess, ebook or whatever. I think, at least in terms of what I got exposed to, because Carly got into it after. Like, I think Kayla was kind of like first mover.
Oh, totally.
In a big way. Outside of the DVD, like infomercial thing, I think Kayla was one of the OGs in terms of selling an info product over social media.
Yeah, I think so. I actually tried starting one with my mom and Russell in 2013. It was called like Body Evolution. And I was trying to go in the same way of like quick little workouts. And I'm pretty sure it had to be like super, like right off the bat of Caleb of what she was doing. Cause like the exact content, everything we were doing was extremely similar. So what she did was like, I think she crushed it like with just nailing like Bikini Body Guide. I would say very exclusive to like most like women, because most people probably aren't either wanting to see themselves in a bikini. I'm completely sure, but like she excluded a pretty big majority of people. She wasn't a mom. She wasn't anything. Like she couldn't really capture like the stay at home market. She couldn't like,
yeah.
She really excluded herself, like saying of being like pretty intense. And then when she finally dominated that, and I think it was good with, I was just looking at like, some of the old pages of Bikini Body Guide, was like in the groups that you're talking about, was like Facebook group specific to a state. And I think totally. She nailed that. Yeah. And I was like, if you think of like at Facebook groups at the time as well, like how many people would invite like your friends, like, hey, let's do this together. Let's go join. Like when we were trying to do Body Evolution with my mom in early 2013, 2012, it was like, we were trying to get these little small groups. And it was exactly the same of like what she was doing, and just seeing like how hard it is to like really dominate that kind of market. And like, would you say she was doing 25 mil a year?
Yeah.
Like that's insane. Like Lady Boss at its peak, right? It was doing 40 something, but the margins weren't even close.
Because supplements, yeah.
Right. And so I think she nailed it of like focusing on what you're saying, like of really mastering her acquisition engine too, of like how she really like she perfected that and didn't pivot. I bet she was like tempted, because I see right now, like she did like foam rollers, all this stuff later on. And like, I bet, and that's like all sweat with Kayla. And so I don't know how like later on in, but she really nailed like that market of like really dominating her market first and then going more inclusive and trying to bring other people. And I don't know how expensive sweat.com is, but that's a pretty
sick. As a domain.
Yeah.
I also think, I bet just looking back at it, I bet sweat was a partial reaction to Bikini Body Guide, which is exclusive, right? And doesn't really capture. And so I think them probably wearing that brand for a couple of years and wearing the exclusivity of it and probably hearing the customer complaints of, you know, well, I look so far away from Kayla, and so will this work for me? Is this the right thing for me? All of that stuff. I think that probably could have been a reaction to the issues that they had with Bikini Body Guide.
Totally.
Which was more exclusive, because I do think the Bikini Body Guide was, it was an intimidating, like you're touching on the thing that most women are very intimidated to do, which is to put on a bikini.
And also it's like a specific season too. I mean, that's like getting ready for summer, right? It's
Totally. And so the Sweat with Kayla app sat at number one in the App Store in more than 142 countries within a year of the release. And the cost to do it was $20 a month, which is, that's at the time, that's 3x Netflix costs, right? Netflix by $8 a month by then. Right? So from a pricing standpoint, I mean, that's spendy. That's spendy for an app to go from $50 for a one-time hit to $20 a month. Yeah, that's quite a big price jump.
Well, on that note, though, the point of comparison is the fitness class industry, right?
Totally.
And gym membership.
Yeah. And so the pricing is all relative. That's actually a steal for some folks who are paying $150 for, you know, biweekly fitness classes.
Yeah. And I do think when they start the original version of that app, it was meant to be 28 minutes, do it from your home, right? You don't need a gym membership anymore. It's like very like low to no equipment. She would also do challenges. They weren't cash challenges. So they moved it to like 12-week programs where like you're doing this 12-week challenge with a bunch of other people and you're posting it within the app. That was another, I think, innovation that they did, was that 28-minute workout. I think that came from an insight that they had as they were training women specifically, that, you know, your usual like personal training thing is like it's an hour long because it's an hour slot and like that's how they like to do their time at the gym, whatever. And I think that they had found that mothers and also working women just didn't want to spend as much time in the gym as men are willing to do. And so their ability to segment down on who the customer was, be women specific. I'm trying to think of what else, like what the other options were back then for women working at home by themselves while also being connected to a community, like P90X, you didn't have a community mm-hmm. aspect of you're trying to get, you know, you're not live streaming P90X with people that you're doing it with. I think that community aspect that they had already kind of started to run as a ground game of like just in person doing it as community events, they captured that within the app to tap into that community piece. And then what did they do to start moving it away from Kayla herself?
Thinking like in 2017, 2018, or in 2019, I think they brought on three different trainers who hit like different avatars, I guess, for like their current customers, right? So you have like Kayla, the way she looks, the way she acts, her lifestyle is going to bring in a certain person. So they went and hired someone who was another influencer. I think she already had a pretty big following, something Wells, Kelsey Wells, mm-hmm. and who was very
Utah-based.
Utah-based? Oh,
yeah. So high school with Carly.
Oh, no way. Yeah. So she was very mom-focused, like recent yeah. moms, like brand new baby, how to get fit again or how to lose the baby fat. And then they brought in another person who was very yoga, probably more spiritual. I feel like the yoga, that industry itself, it brings in people who are maybe just getting into working out. Yoga has a certain vibe of either people who, like if you know how to do yoga, it's like really intense, but yeah. also yoga is a good little morning workout. Like
it's,
nice,
like, it's not
stretching.
About the ego of like what you look like, you know what I mean? It's like there's just no ego.
Namaste and just
yeah.
all peace and vibes.
And then who's the third?
So that was the two. So they brought in two, what I know. And then like if you go to the sweat.com now, literally all shapes and sizes.
Totally.
Like any kind of person.
Who do they have now? How many are
I mean, there is,
now?
Yeah, like just looking, you got 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like 8 probably.
Yeah.
I don't know, even more. Probably like 12 different trainers.
Yeah, I think now they have, it's like Pilates and breathwork mm-hmm. and powerlifting and yoga and yeah, the whole thing. And I think that the important thing that they did with all of those people was they signed them up for long-term deals, and those people all had their own distribution channel, which I think started to eliminate the key woman risk of Kayla, because you're less tied to her as your sole distribution channel. And also I think, you know, the app itself, I think iFit was probably able to look at it and like Kayla, I think Kayla created a key woman risk from an acquisition standpoint, but if you can show that acquisition risk got minimized, and then the app itself is driven by just the stickiness. Like what's your churn versus your, like what's your net customer retention is basically the question. If you can show that you can acquire customers outside of Kayla, and if you can show that your net customer retention outside of Kayla pushing it is good, what are the other issues that you would have as a potential acquirer?
Well, real quick, I do want to play that back though. To summarize, there are two things that she did there that were brilliant. She captured new segments, right?
Yeah.
She opened up new segments, new customer profiles that were still consistent with the ultimate purpose of the app, which was to help women find fitness in a really convenient, low friction way. And then she de-risked her own business, right? In terms of that key person dependency, as you mentioned, it has now become a platform for trainers with a demonstrable brand, but it's not dependent on Kayla. And so as you think about it from the perspective of a potential investor, I look at it as a platform for existing trainers, a ton of broad segments across the female fitness community. And I likely have the ability to continue bringing on new trainers with their own followings, their own segments. And so I can scale that.
Yeah. So enter iFit into the question, which has its own thing that it's doing from equipment and its own content playbook, content software playbook that it's trying to run. What do we know in terms of iFit looking at Sweat and where Sweat started to fit into the picture of what iFit was and is trying to be?
So this would be a good time to cover a little bit of the history of iFit.
This would be the perfect time. Hey, real quick, if you're a business owner that's doing at least $1 million a year in revenue on a digital or coaching business, we'd love to talk to you. If you go to dealmaven.io and apply on our page, we will get in touch with you and see if we can take your great business and make it even better.
All right, let's do it. So iFit started as Icon Health and Fitness. This is in 1977. So
77?
77. So we are talking legacy, old school fitness.
Is that Utah? Was that Utah?
Utah.
Hell
Utah,
yeah.
And not just Utah, Northern Utah, Logan, Utah.
That's less cool. I wish it was just Utah.
Yeah, not many of y'all have heard of Logan, Utah, but after this, you can say you have. So Scott Watterson and Gary Stevenson of LDS Church fame were the founders of that company.
Gary Stevenson?
Correct. That is the
Elder Stevenson?
Elder Stevenson. He's a high-ranking member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But these two apparently went to college together at Utah State, and they were ambitious entrepreneurs.
Did you know that about Elder Stevenson? Did you know that prior to?
I did not know it prior to this. No.
See? That's why you tune in.
And I feel like I had read his bio on Wikipedia and somehow breezed over that, but this was a good reminder of his humble beginnings. So they were both passionate about the fitness industry, and they saw a chance to make an impact. And that actually came in the form of first importing and marketing exercise equipment in the United States.
They were the first Alibaba of fitness?
That was made in Asia. Correct.
That's amazing.
And if you think about the time, right, the 70s, it was still kind of early in terms of home fitness. So they saw an angle there to capture some of that momentum. They believed that, at least my read on it is, they believed that home fitness was going to become a thing. Everybody was going to have home fitness equipment in their own homes, which is a pretty prescient view given kind of what we saw in 2020 and beyond. But it started in hardcore equipment.
Do we know what that, like, what that equipment looked like?
Yeah, just weights.
So, relatively little.
Is this the one where, like, you put the band around the back of you and, like, it
shakes?
Yeah, vibrates.
Relatively little information is available on what their original product offering was. Not sure if the quality was great. Don't know much about it. But you may have heard of some of their brands. Nordotrack, Proform, sure. Weider.
Weider?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, you can buy them at a lot of big box retail stores, weightlifting equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah, but most of those were acquisitions. So this is where I think Sweat is going to come into play. This is a company that is really, its success was born on acquisitions, finding struggling operators, but taking great brands, rolling that into their business, improving the operations, putting it through kind of a singular channel of distribution in terms of sales of said equipment, and winning in the market. And so this has been a super successful business. As of right now, it's estimated that Icon, now iFit, is valued at $7 billion.
Jeez, Maria.
So again, what started as an import and marketing business is now a $7 billion business. So they were hardcore equipment focused. But again, they've been innovators from day one. It sounds like they came up with the Space Saver design, now found in a lot of equipment. That's when you see the treadmills folded up. So you can actually put it somewhere. Think about all the different sizes and flavors of homes in the United States and beyond. This made it a more accessible industry in terms of treadmills and things of that nature. So then kind of transitioning to iFit, as you can imagine, they have this portfolio of brands making equipment. They then started to move into the cutting edge space of technology as it relates to fitness equipment. And what this started out as was a product in the 90s called iFit, which was a simple workout card system where users could insert a programmed card into their fitness equipment to access preset workouts.
Huh.
When?
This was in the 90s. I didn't have a specific year, but again, we don't see this anymore. So it was a precursor of things to come. Try and fail, try and fail, try and fail. And eventually you will succeed.
You would put the card into where?
Into the fitness equipment.
Ah. And like a Bowflex?
I'm kind of imagining, and I'm sure you've seen this at some gyms where you can use an app or you can tap something against it and you can set up just a recommended number of sets, reps, duration, something equivalent to that, but in the 90s.
That's awesome.
Maybe it was a punch card. We'll have to dig more into this.
Imagine it's like Bill Gates like doing the punches of computers and then you run it and it does the program, but like for fitness.
I mean, we did have the internet in the 90s. Well, you may forget.
I know. That was like in the 60s.
But for those of us in a different generation.
But fitness lags innovation, you know, relative to the computer.
So these guys, they were at least in the cutting edge of that. 90s, you move into the 2000s, advent of the iPhone.
That's insane. Like, how did they beat the iPhone to that?
Well, so I don't know if it was a specific app, but again, we're leveraging technology to get those preset workouts. But in 08, we have the iPhone, advent of the App Store, at-home applications. They saw an opportunity there. And so iFit evolved in 2009. It really became what we know it as today, which is truly a software application, one you can both access on your phone through iFit, as well as a software system that ultimately they partner with their own brands like Nordotrack or others to provide a software platform with workouts, access to Google Maps so you could run in different parts of the world, a lot of unique uses of internet technology to kind of increase the breadth of the workout offering on those machines.
iFit buys Icon, or Icon buys iFit?
So iFit was a subsidiary brand of Icon for the app.
Got it.
So that brand builds up, sees success from 2009 onwards with, again, the increase and proliferation of Internet of Things technology.
Mm-hmm.
So iPhones everywhere, more connected treadmills and other devices. Now, you can't go into a gym and step on a treadmill without it being connected to something, right?
Without being able to run through Taiwan or something.
Right. I ran through New Zealand the other day.
Did you really?
I did, yeah.
I've been to the New Zealand, like, photography that they have is right next to where my brother had one of his weddings.
All right. Yeah, I've done
one of his marriages. He got married in New Zealand.
I've done like three of the tracks, so hopefully it was one of the same ones. So they become an app company and a hardware company, right? Forward thinking, as that company continues to evolve or evolve, they realize that iFit is kind of the beating heart of the brand moving forward. So iFit becomes the...
Not Weider.
Not Weider, unfortunately. Not the
How
legacy
prescient
brand Weider.
Of them.
So they actually changed the name of the parent company, Icon Health and Fitness, to iFit. So now the company is iFit. And that's where Sweat comes in. So they've now spread out the business across multiple products, both hardware and software. They've stepped into different adjacencies, as we say. And as a part of that strategy, acquisitions were a part of it. Software development was a part of it. They see Sweat as an opportunity. Why? Sweat gives them access to a new set of demographic segments, not just in terms of gender and preference, but also in terms of geography. I think in NordicTrack, I would guess the NordicTrack proliferation in Southeast Asia probably isn't super strong. We need to fact check that. Predominantly a North American brand.
Totally.
Right? But if you come back to Sweat, first and foremost, Sweat is in what, 140 countries? Is that right?
Number one in 142 countries.
Number one in 142 countries. And a big part of that presence is in the APAC region, which Kayla Itzinas herself is from.
Yep.
Half of all Instagram followers hail from APAC.
Really?
Yeah, correct. And so it stands to reason that with this acquisition, they access new customer profiles, a new segment, and they really capture an entirely new geography.
And I bet from iFit's perspective, their social media presence, I would assume, is anemic at best. Like NordicTrack isn't really blowing things out of the water from a social media perspective. And I think they're probably feeling, you know, you have Peloton and you have Mirror and you have Lululemon. You have all these.
They're digital native. I mean, some of them are digital native companies.
And you have all this pressure, right? Especially in North America. I don't know, like North America is probably a very bloody, it's probably very competitive, you know, like
this has to be the most competitive market.
Yeah. Like in terms of fitness hardware that's coming out. I mean, I know NordicTrack well, but from a standpoint, yeah, I don't know of many other brands out there that would be as attractive as the Sweat app in terms of grabbing it that have like high growth potential.
Yeah. So if you're in the middle of this multi-decade transition from hardware only into software, makes a ton of sense to go to a company that's digital native.
Yeah.
Right? New customers, captive following online. It's a fantastic way to kind of open up your customer base.
Yeah.
And to continue moving forward.
From a size perspective, do we know how big this is relative to iFit's? Like, is this the biggest thing that they've ever done? Or this is kind of right within their, you said a little bit of, in terms of capital raising, like they needed to raise some outside capital in order to get this deal done?
Yeah. So they raised capital in 2020, $200 million in a private equity deal. And there is speculation that they're going to IPO, but probably awaiting, like many of us, market conditions to improve. Yeah. So yeah, it again stands to reason that $200 million would help buy this out.
And do we know what the ultimate deal was?
I read somewhere that it was $119 million. To in cash to Kayla and Toby.
And then
no one knows the remaining, but the exact deal never was actually like released. But I did read, so according to someone's financials, that someone said it had like about 119.
I've heard 480, I mean, it's.
Oh, the actual deal. So yeah.
Like the deal itself, I've seen a lot of $400 million.
400 was like the number I saw, but no, in cash,
486.
So according to the Wall Street Journal, $300 million.
Cash, stock, some combo.
Likely some combo. Because if you're raising $200 million, you're not going to blow your entire war chest.
And I'm sure post-COVID and all that, I'm sure there aren't a lot of all-cash deals out there for something like this. And I also think you can see post-acquisition, like Kayla is still there doing content around Sweat. So you know that she's still tied to this thing in some way. And from some of the interviews that I've seen Toby do, it doesn't seem like he is as tied to it as she is. Like, it seems like he's out and she's still there in some ways. I'm sure there's some earnout component to the deal. So I guess summing up, Bobby, what's the playbook? What's the playbook if you have a personal brand that's doing well, that has some momentum to it, but you want to sell the business one day? What are the levers that you have to pull?
Well, I think we've talked about brand, right? And so whether it's a hard pivot or something else, I think the transition to brand, and a brand that is perhaps more inclusive, exclusive, but a brand that is independent of the individual creator, right, is a critical piece to this. And I don't think Sweat makes that move if it's BBG by Kayla Itzinez.
Yeah.
And so that's a less attractive proposition. By transitioning the brand itself to Sweat, by moving to an application platform with software rather than a content-based PDF with multiple distribution channels through the App Store, et cetera, was a big part of that growth and that transition that makes it more attractive as a potential portfolio company. And so I think the first move you got to make is figure out, how can I capture more revenue through different channels, and how can I open up my brand and remove some of that key person risk with that brand, as you mentioned?
Yeah, I think maybe one day we'll do Clean Simple Eats, because I think that it was a very similar...
Definitely.
It went the supplement route, but it was an influencer couple that was doing info product guides that de-risked the distribution aspect of what they were doing by going to retail, right? Retail distribution outside of their own personal brand, and had another great exit while avoiding the software side of it, right? And so you need to get them on since you live right next to them. Chandler, from a marketing standpoint, what do you see as the playbook if your marketing channel is solely based on social media and a personal brand and you want to have something that's sellable? What's the move? What's the playbook?
I think it was like seeing the community base. If you can really surround your brand, like having a community, it makes you less reliant as like the key man. Hearing Toby talk about it, call it key man risk, right? Really of putting your business as like an investment. It's like if you're investing for the long term and like willing to take some hits to really try out like new people on the front end, trying different like attractive characters, different people who would like attract a certain type of audience, like try seeing those people. And I thought it was interesting of like maybe going and partnering with like bigger influencers too. I think a lot of times, like, if I was going to try to go redo Kayla's thing, I would have thought, oh, I'm just going to go hire some random other person, some fitness trainer at Lifetime who maybe wants to try to be an actress or something.